Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we're going to be looking at something you use probably every day, but maybe haven't thought that much about. Rhetorical questions.
Oh, yeah.
And not just any rhetorical questions, but get this, rhetorical questions in the Bible.
Okay.
Now, I know you might be thinking that sounds a little, well, dry, maybe a little boring.
Yeah.
But trust me on this one. We're going to be looking at some really interesting material today that will hopefully change how you read and think about Scripture.
Yeah.
So the source material for today's deep dive comes from an academic lecture by Dr. George Payton.
Okay.
And he's a scholar of Bible translation.
Gotcha.
And in this lecture, he's talking about some of the challenges that Bible translators face.
Right.
And one of those big challenges is, how do you translate rhetorical questions?
That's interesting.
So that's going to be kind of our jumping off point today.
Okay.
And, well, actually, before we jump into the Bible stuff, maybe you should back up just a little bit.
Yeah.
And kind of remind ourselves, what is a rhetorical question?
Good point.
In the first place.
Yeah. So a rhetorical question is a question that's not really asked to get an answer.
Right.
It's asked to create an effect or to make a point.
So like when someone says, is the Pope Catholic?
Exactly.
They're not really expecting you to Google it.
Right. They already know the answer.
Yeah.
It's just a way of stating the obvious, but in a kind of forceful or interesting way.
Okay. So we all know what a rhetorical question is.
Yeah.
We use them all the time.
All the time.
But when it comes to the Bible, how does this all play out? I mean, are there a lot of rhetorical questions in the Bible?
Oh, there are tons of them.
Really?
And they're used in all sorts of different ways.
Interesting.
But one of the things that Dr. Payton points out is that for translators, one of the big challenges is figuring out if a question in the original Hebrew or Greek was meant to be a genuine question or a rhetorical one.
Oh, so like sometimes it's not so obvious whether the speaker's actually looking for an answer or...
Yeah, it's like sometimes you get a text message and you can't tell if the person's being sarcastic or not. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
But with ancient languages and a whole different cultural context.
Right. So, yeah, the stakes are a lot higher.
Yeah, you don't want to accidentally misinterpret a passage because you missed the rhetorical nature of the question.
Okay. So let's look at an example.
Okay.
So one of the examples that Dr. Payton brings up is from Mark chapter 8, verse 36.
Got it.
And in this verse, Jesus asks, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul?
Right.
Now, to me, that sounds pretty rhetorical.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Like, he's not really expecting someone to pull out a calculator.
No.
And come up with a number.
No.
But I guess my question is, what makes that rhetorical? Like, what are the clues there that tell us?
That's a good question. So, I think one of the clues is just the nature of the question itself.
Okay.
It's not like Jesus is asking for a factual answer.
Right.
He's using this question to make a point.
Okay.
To get people to think about their priorities, you know, is worldly success really worth sacrificing your spiritual well-being for? It's a way of getting under the surface and forcing people to confront something deep within themselves.
Yeah. And I guess it's also kind of implied in that question that obviously it's not worth it to gain the whole world and lose your soul.
Exactly. It's kind of a no-brainer. Yeah. But by putting it in the form of a question, he's making it more powerful, more impactful.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got this rhetorical question in the original Greek.
Right.
How do Bible translators then deal with that?
That's the big question.
I mean, do they always keep it as a question in the translation?
Well, ideally, yes.
Okay.
If the target language has a similar way of using rhetorical questions, they can often just translate it directly, and it will have the same impact.
But what if the target language doesn't really have that same concept of rhetorical questions?
That's when things get tricky.
Okay, so then what?
Well, then the translator has to get a little creative.
Okay.
They might have to rephrase the question. They might have to add some explanatory words.
Okay.
Or they might even have to turn it into a statement.
Oh, wow.
But they have to do it in a way that preserves
the
original meaning and impact of the text.
So I'm curious, are there examples of specific languages where there are sort of different ways of handling rhetorical questions?
Dr. Payton actually gives some really fascinating examples.
Okay.
So, for example, he talks about the Himba language.
The Himba.
Yeah. It's a language spoken in Southern Africa.
Okay.
And they actually have a specific word in their language.
Oh, wow.
That's used to mark a question as rhetorical.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's like this built-in sarcasm font.
That's so cool.
I know, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So for them, it's really easy to translate a rhetorical question.
Right.
Because they have this specific linguistic tool.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we got this.
Exactly. Yeah. But not all languages are that lucky.
Right.
So in those cases, the translators have to be a lot more creative.
So this is really interesting. Mm-hmm. This whole idea that, you know, the translator's job is not just about, you know, word for word substitution.
It's about really understanding the nuances of the language.
And the intent of the speaker.
And figuring out how to convey that
in
a completely different language and culture.
That's incredible.
It's a really fascinating process.
Okay, so we've talked about how translators identify rhetorical questions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the challenges they face.
Right.
But I'm also curious, you know, are there different types of rhetorical questions in the Bible? I mean, do they all serve kind of the same purpose?
That's a really good question. And the answer is no.
Oh.
They are incredibly versatile.
Okay.
And they can be used for all sorts of different purposes.
Give me some examples, because I am ready to dive deeper into this rhetorical rabbit hole.
Okay, let's do it. So one really interesting example comes from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5.
All right.
And this is the story of the woman who had been suffering from bleeding for 12 years.
Yeah, the one who touches Jesus's garment.
Exactly.
And is instantly healed.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's this moment in the story where Jesus is walking through a crowd.
Okay.
And he suddenly stops and he asks, "Who touched my garments?"
Yeah.
Now, at first glance, that seems like a totally genuine question, right?
Yeah, he wants to know who touched him.
Right.
It's a crowded marketplace.
Exactly.
People are bumping into him.
It would be almost impossible to know who specifically had touched him.
So why would he ask that?
Well, that's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
He's not actually looking for information.
Oh.
He's using this question rhetorically to draw attention to the woman's act of faith.
So even though the disciples even thought it was a genuine question.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But Jesus is actually using it for a different purpose.
To make a point.
Exactly. To highlight this incredible moment of faith and healing.
So what are some other examples?
Well, in Mark 3.23.
Okay.
Jesus asks, "How can Satan cast out Satan?"
Okay.
And that's a rhetorical question that he uses to emphasize the absurdity of the idea.
Yeah.
He's in lead with the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Mark 8.12, he asks, "Why does this generation seek a sign?"
Okay.
And that's a question that expresses his frustration with the people's lack of faith.
So they're not all just, you know, sarcastic rebukes or gotchas.
Yeah.
They can be used for different.
They can be used to express a whole range of emotions.
Interesting. Okay, so we've got rhetorical questions.
Yes.
But you mentioned earlier something about rhetorical statements.
Yes, rhetorical statements are really fascinating.
What are those?
Well, they're kind of like rhetorical questions, but in statement form.
Okay.
So they're not actually asking a question, but they're still used to achieve a similar effect.
So how do you even tell?
Yeah.
If a statement is supposed to be rhetorical.
Right. It's all about context.
Okay.
You have to look at who's speaking.
Okay.
The situation.
Uh-huh.
The overall tone of the passage.
Okay.
So Dr. Payton gives this great example from John 11.
Okay.
Remember, after Lazarus dies.
Right.
Jesus tells the disciples he's going back to Judea.
Yeah. And Thomas says, "Let us also go that we may die with him."
Exactly.
Yeah. I always thought that was just Thomas kind of being, you know,
resigned to his fate.
Yeah, like, oh, guess this is it.
But a lot of scholars think that that's actually a rhetorical statement.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's packed with emotion. Yeah. It's not that he literally wants to die.
But
it's that he's expressing this incredible loyalty and solidarity with Jesus.
Oh, wow.
You know, he's saying, "We're with you no matter what."
Wow, that puts a whole new spin on that verse.
Doesn't it? It's not just passive resignation.
Yeah.
It's this powerful declaration of commitment.
So how would a translator then deal with something like that?
Right, because if you just translate it literally, it might not have the same impact.
Right, it just sounds like a really depressing statement.
Right, exactly. Okay. So again, they might have to rephrase it, add some explanatory words, or even shift the focus to highlight the underlying emotion rather than just the literal words.
So it's like one of those optical illusions where you're looking at it one way and you're seeing one image.
Right.
But then if you shift your perspective,
you see something completely different.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about rhetorical language.
Yeah.
It's like this hidden layer of meaning.
Okay. So rhetorical statements.
Yeah.
They're kind of like rhetorical questions, but in statement form.
Exactly.
But I'm still a little fuzzy on like how they're different.
Sure.
From just regular statements.
Okay, well, think of it this way.
Okay.
A regular statement just conveys information
right.
directly.
Okay.
But a rhetorical statement uses a statement
okay.
to achieve a specific effect.
Okay.
So, for example, in 1 Timothy 3.5,
okay.
Paul writes, "For if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how can he care for God's church?"
Right.
Now, that sounds like a pretty straightforward statement.
It does.
But it's actually a rhetorical statement.
Okay.
Because Paul isn't literally asking for advice
right.
on how to manage a church.
Yeah.
He's using this statement
yeah.
to make a point
hmm.
about the importance of leadership skills.
Okay.
He's drawing this parallel
okay.
between managing a family
okay.
and leading a congregation.
So he's saying if you can't even manage your own family,
right.
how are you going to manage a whole church?
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's a really effective way of getting that point across.
So it's kind of like those unwritten rules
yeah.
of communication where you have to really understand the context.
Exactly.
And the cultural norms.
To really get what the speaker's trying to say.
Yeah, this is really interesting
because yeah.
I'm realizing
yeah.
now how many times I've probably yeah. read the Bible
mm-hmm.
and completely missed
yeah.
the point because I didn't recognize the rhetorical.
Yeah, it happens to all of us.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important for translators
yeah.
to be sensitive to these things.
Okay.
And to find ways to bring those nuances into the translation.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty
This whole world of rhetorical statements.
And, you know, Dr. Payton also talks about how rhetorical questions can be used to introduce new topics or to transition to different themes.
Oh, that's interesting because I'm always fascinated
yeah.
by how the biblical writers kind of weave together
right.
different ideas and stories.
Exactly.
And it all feels very seamless.
Yeah, it's really masterful.
Yeah.
So how do they do that?
Yeah.
Well, rhetorical questions can act as a kind of bridge between two thoughts.
Hmm.
So it's like they're guiding the reader
okay.
from one point to the next.
So like a signpost.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's like, hey, pay attention. We're shifting gears here.
Okay. Do you have an example of that from the Bible?
Yeah. So in the book of Ruth,
okay.
chapter 3,
uh-huh.
Naomi says to Ruth, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you?"
Right.
Now, she's not really asking for permission here.
Right.
She's already made up her mind
yeah.
to find a suitable husband for Ruth.
Right.
But she uses this rhetorical question
okay.
as a way of introducing this new phase of the story.
So it's like one of those previously on
exactly.
segments yeah. in a TV show.
Exactly.
Where they're reminding you what happened.
Yeah.
And setting you up.
Yeah, they're getting you ready
yeah.
for what's going to happen next.
This is so cool.
It's amazing how they do that.
I'm starting to see the Bible as like this incredibly intricate tapestry with all these different threads and patterns
yeah.
that are all kind of interwoven.
And the more you look at it,
yeah.
the more details you discover.
But sometimes those details can be
right.
a little puzzling.
Yeah, sometimes you run into a passage and you're like,
yeah.
wait, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And Dr. Payton points out that wow. sometimes even when rhetorical questions are translated accurately,
okay.
they can still leave modern readers
okay.
scratching their heads.
Give me an example.
Okay, so in Mark 14.
Hmm.
Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Right.
He's agonizing in prayer before his arrest.
Right.
And the disciples are exhausted. They keep falling asleep.
Yep.
And so Jesus wakes them up.
Okay.
And he asks Simon, "Are you asleep?"
Right.
Now that seems like a pretty straightforward question, right?
Yeah.
He's checking to see if Peter's awake.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets weird.
Okay.
Instead of reprimanding Peter,
uh-huh.
Jesus says, "Keep sleeping and resting."
Yeah, that doesn't seem to make sense.
It doesn't, does it?
Yeah. Why would he tell them to keep sleeping?
Right.
At this critical moment?
Well, some scholars think that what's going on here is that Jesus is actually using sarcasm.
Really?
Yeah. So it's like he's saying, "Oh, yeah, sure, just keep sleeping.
Right.
Everything's fine.
Like, go ahead, sleep through my arrest. No problem."
Exactly. And it's a way of expressing his frustration
yeah.
and disappointment.
Without having to directly confront them.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like those rhetorical questions.
Yes.
But in statement form.
It's a rhetorical statement that's dripping with sarcasm and emotion.
This is really blowing my mind.
Isn't it fascinating?
It's like I never realized.
Do you have any advice for our listeners
yeah.
on how to apply this to their own reading of the Bible?
Yeah, like how can we take all this
yeah.
and make it practical?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I think the simplest advice is just be attentive.
Okay.
Pay attention to the language,
right.
the context,
yeah.
the overall tone of the passage.
Okay.
And ask yourself.
Okay, I'm ready. What kind of questions should I be asking?
Well, first of all, ask yourself, is this a genuine question or is there something more going on here?
Okay.
What is the speaker trying to achieve with this question or statement?
Okay.
How does it contribute to the overall message of the passage?
Okay.
And don't be afraid to dig a little deeper.
Yeah.
You know, consult commentaries,
right.
Research the historical context, talk about it with other people.
So it's kind of like being a detective. You're looking for clues.
Right.
You're piecing together the evidence.
Exactly.
And you're trying to uncover.
And sometimes the most obvious answer isn't the right one.
Right.
You have to look beneath the surface.
And I think that's what I'm realizing is that I've been reading the Bible kind of on autopilot for so long.
I think we all do that sometimes. You know, we get so used to reading it a certain way.
Right. And just kind of taking it
at
face value.
And we miss all those hidden layers of meaning.
This conversation has been so eye-opening.
I'm glad to hear that.
It really has.
Yeah. It's been fun for me, too.
Yeah.
I always love talking about this stuff. So as we kind of wrap up here.
Okay.
What's the one thing that you hope our listeners take away from this deep dive?
Well, I hope they realize that rhetorical questions and statements aren't just literary quirks. You know, they're not just interesting little details. They're actually powerful tools that biblical writers use to challenge us, to inspire us, to move us.
And so by understanding how these devices work, we can unlock a deeper level of meaning in the text.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I'm already noticing a difference in how I'm reading the Bible.
That's great.
Yeah. It's like those rhetorical questions and statements are like jumping off the page now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now that I know what to look for.
You've got your detective hat on.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, there's one.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool.
So to our listeners out there.
Okay.
We leave you with this challenge.
Okay.
Pay attention to those questions and statements that seem a little out of place or unexpected.
Right.
Don't just skim over them.
Yeah.
Dig deeper. Ask questions.
Right.
And see what you uncover.
And don't be afraid to get it wrong.
Right.
You know?
It's a journey.
It's all about the journey.
Yeah. It's about
wrestling with the text.
Yeah.
And trying to understand it.
And sometimes the best way to understand something is to get it wrong first.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what makes it so fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's this never-ending process of discovery.
This has been a fantastic conversation.
I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And to our listeners.
Oh.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.
Keep those detective hats on.
We'll be back soon with more explorations into the world of ideas and insights.
See you next time.
Until then, happy reading.